Hey there, this is Tim at The Bible Project, and welcome to The Bible Project Podcast. If you've been tracking with this series on the Tree of Life, you'll know that we are following the theme of trees on high places throughout the storyline of the Bible. Today we are going to arrive at a really interesting set of stories about Moses. Moses had some really important moments in front of trees, especially by bodies of water or on high places. We're going to look at two of these today. The first is a story of Moses and what has come in English to be called the story of the burning bush. And we're going to explore why that translation doesn't quite capture the whole meaning and significance of what this burning tree bush is all about. The second story we're going to look at is one of these odd short stories in the Bible. It's in Exodus chapter 15, after the Israelites escaped from slavery in Egypt. They're wandering the wilderness looking for water, and they find this pool of water that they can't drink from because it's bitter. And so what happens? Moses saves the people by tossing a tree into the pool. This strange little story is full of meaning when you see it in light of the bigger design pattern of trees in the Bible. We're going to explore all of this and even more on today's episode. So thanks for joining us. Here we go.
We're talking about trees.
Yeah.
And we are going to, this episode, talk about Moses and how he is connected to this theme.
Yeah.
Of
recurring design pattern motif.
Yes.
Yes.
Of trees on high places.
Yeah.
But actually, more specifically, the high place being where humanity and God dwell together.
Yeah.
And the tree being two trees
that create a plot tension between them.
Yeah. How are you going to live in this high place with God? Are you going to take of his life?
Yeah. God brought you up here to become his eternal partner.
Yeah.
In ruling creation.
Are you going to eat of the tree of life, live by his wisdom and his presence, or eat of the tree of knowing good and bad, seize wisdom on your own terms?
Yeah.
One tree leads to eternal life. One tree leads to death.
Yeah.
And God exiles the humans because if they also eat of the tree of life, this death will become eternal death.
Eternal death. Yeah.
Bad news.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that if you open the Bible thinking the Bible is about how do I get to heaven when I die, it's very different. It's saying God created you to rule with me on earth forever, but you're going to die because you want to do it on your own terms.
Yeah.
But I want you to rule the earth with me forever.
Yeah. That's right.
So it's not how do I get to heaven? It's how do I get to this, this vocational calling of ruling the earth with God.
That's right.
Forever.
And all of a sudden, Revelation 21 and 22 pop into focus.
Which is?
Well, the last sentence of the biblical narrative is, and they ruled with God forever and ever. And they're in the new Eden, which is the new Jerusalem, which is the new creation.
All those images are connected in the Bible.
Correct. Yeah.
So that was a cosmic narrative.
That's right. That was the cosmic.
Because this is humanity in its infancy.
Yeah.
Innocent.
Yeah.
With a choice before any bad choice has been made. Everything is good.
Mm-hmm.
Now death enters the picture. Relationships are
divided. Humans are doing what God warned. He said eating from the tree of knowing good and bad would result in death.
Yeah.
And what the humans start doing outside of the garden is killing each other. God is not the first one to bring about anybody's death.
Yeah.
Humans are.
Yeah. Hating each other, fighting each other.
Yeah.
Taking wisdom on our own terms.
Yeah. Participating in building human structures that participate in corrupt spiritual powers that are also in rebellion, resulting in widespread violence. In the building of Lamech City.
Yes. This isn't just our choice. It was a choice that was connected to this.
A cosmic rebellion.
Cosmic rebellion choice, which we haven't really been talking about.
Yeah.
So God tells them, look, there's going to be a seed of the woman, an offspring, a human.
Yes. Yeah.
Who will deal with the mess you've made.
That's right. He'll overcome.
He'll undo it.
He'll undo it. He'll overcome the agent of evil at its source.
you won't be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You're stuck now with that choice.
That's right.
But someone will come and undo it for you. And while doing that, in the act of doing that, we'll suffer the consequence of the choice as well.
Yeah. So he'll suffer along with Adam and Eve and all their children of coming under the power and death power of the snake, being bitten by it. But paradoxically, that being bit by the snake will be his way of overcoming it, which is something Adam and Eve did not do.
So the rest of the biblical narrative, you're thinking humans need to get back to the high place.
Back to that moment.
Back to presence with God, eating of the tree of life.
Totally.
In connection with him, trusting his wisdom for what is good and bad.
Yeah.
And to do that, it's going to require some sort of sacrifice. And that whole idea, as they await that, there is the practice of sacrificing animals, which we know later is all connected to this, of like getting back to the high place, the holy of holies, the hot spot, where the tree of life is, where God's presence is. To do that, you sacrifice an animal to go in, and it's a substitute.
That's right. So Noah is given a choice connected to another tree about whether he will build an ark. He's righteous and blameless. God wants to preserve the future of the seed of the woman through him. He makes the right choice at that tree.
He doesn't eat of the tree of good and bad.
No. He hands off, and in so doing, he builds the vehicle of salvation with the tree. That land, that wooden vehicle of salvation, he turns the tree of testing into the vehicle of salvation, which floats on the waters of divine justice and lands atop a new Eden.
Okay.
I'm waxing poetic here.
Yeah.
And then he takes of the wood of that ark tree and offers not himself, but a sacrifice.
He turns the tree into an altar. And that's the image we see in the temple moving forward, is you don't walk past a tree of good, knowing good and bad to get to the Holy of Holies.
Yeah, yeah.
You walk by,
An the altar. That's right.
And you make a sacrifice. And so now, parallel image of being in a high place of where God and humans lived and ruled together. And its original design was the tree of life and the tree of knowing good and bad. Now you've got this taste of it. Let's get back to that. And you, to get to the tree of life, you are not eating of the tree to get there, but then you make a sacrifice on the tree.
Yeah.
To deal with the fact that the mess has already been made.
Correct.
And by doing that, you actually do get to participate in God's life. You get to start to enjoy God's life. Not
That's
in
right.
the eternal sense
that
it, you were designed to.
But in your own mortal narrative,
yeah,
you experience a fleeting gift, glimpse of the tree of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And somehow, by Abram doing this, and he gets a glimpse of that life and the rescue of his son, and then he ends up becoming this, this great family.
Yeah.
But the whole point of that
was
because he wants to get humans back to eternal life.
Correct.
And this family is going to participate that in some significant way.
Correct.
There's still going to be a seed from this family who is going to deal with the cosmic evil that's been unleashed and do it through sacrificing himself.
That's it.
So, Moses.
The story moves forward. The family multiplies. And through a whole bunch of episodes we don't have time to explore, the story of Isaac, the story of Jacob, the story of Joseph. But the sin of Abraham's family, they replay the sins of their fathers, and it lands them exiled down in Egypt. And that's where the book of Exodus begins. Exodus begins by saying, the first sentence is, Israel in exile, mirroring Adam and Eve, humanity in exile. And yet, in their exile, the sons of Israel were fruitful and were multiplying in the land of their exile.
The divine test.
That's how the book of Exodus begins. However, that fruitful multiplication of immigrants looks to Pharaoh like a threat.
Yeah.
And so he begins to kill them off. And there's three attempts to destroy them. The third attempt is to start throwing all the baby boys into the waters of the Nile. And here we are introduced to a new Noah figure in Exodus chapter 2.
Yeah.
Exodus chapter 2. Now a man from the house of Levi went and took a daughter of Levi, and the woman conceived and bore a son. And
this is all before the house of Levi had the import of being priests.
Correct. Right? Correct. It'll be important that Moses and his brother Aaron are Levites because they're going to found the priesthood.
Yeah.
But yes, this is before the priesthood exists as such. But the reason why the narrator's telling us they're from the house of Levi...
because he knows where the story's going.
This is the origin story of the priestly line.
Got it.
Yeah. So Exodus 2, verse 2, the woman conceived and bore a son. Oh, we've got a seed of the woman on the way. And when she saw that he was good, she hid him for 3 months. But when
usually when someone sees something is good, they're about to do something bad.
That's right, unless this is an inversion story.
Okay.
But when she could hide him no longer, she got an ark of reeds. Tevat gomeh.
The same word that Noah built.
Yep. The word ark appears 2 times in the Hebrew Bible. It's the teva of gopher, the wood that he builds. And then the word ark appears right here in the introduction to the Moses story.
The teva of reeds.
A teva gomeh. Noah builds a teva gopher.
What's that in Hebrew? Gopher?
Gopher. Yeah.
Oh, so that's just a transliteration.
This transliteration, yeah. Teva gopher. Moses' mom gets a teva gomeh. And she covered it inside and out with tar and pitch. When Noah gets the commands to make the tevat gopher,
he covers it with...
yeah, he covers it with pitch inside and out.
Yeah.
Then she put the child...
there's another design pattern.
Another design pattern. She put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. So into the waters of death.
Yeah.
There's all these babies drowning because of Pharaoh's evil. But here is one seed placed in an ark into those same waters of death.
Yeah.
But he is saved, and in him will be the salvation of the whole family. The new Noah. So he floats into Pharaoh's house. He grows up, and he somehow still knows that he's an Israelite.
Yeah.
Because he goes out one day to look upon his brothers, and he sees an Egyptian slave master beating an Israelite slave. So he murders that Egyptian. Pharaoh hears about it. He's angry. He wants to kill Moses. Moses flees into the wilderness.
His own exile.
Yep. So now he's in exile from Israel.
From exile.
From the place of his family's exile. Yeah.
Double exile.
That's right.
Exile inception.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, totally. Exodus 3. Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, who was the priest of Midian. We skipped that story, but that's a cool story. And he led the flock to the west in the wilderness and came to Horev, which is the Hebrew word for dry place, the mountain of Elohim. His flock like wandered up to a high place.
Okay.
This is the mountain that's going to feature in the rest of the Torah. Now the angel of Yahweh became seeable to him in blazing fire from the midst of a seneh. Seneh.
Not an etz.
Not an eitz.
Or an eitz.
It's a type of eitz. It's a type of tree. But it's a seneh tree. Seneh.
Oh, okay. Seneh Sinai.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is the only time this species of tree, bush, appears in the Hebrew Bible. And it's spelled with the same root letters as, the word Sinai.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's at Horeb, the mountain of God.
So that's interesting. I thought the mountain was called Sinai, but the mountain's called
the mountain is
Horeb.
The mountain is called by two names in the Hebrew Bible, Horeb and Sinai. Here, both are used.
Yeah.
One as explicitly Horeb, and then Sinai is here with a word as a word play on the Sineh bush.
Yeah. Okay.
And so Moses looked, and behold, the Sineh was burning with fire, but the seneh was not consumed. So you have a seneh. What is the fire? The fire is the presence of the Holy One in a tree. The holy divine presence sitting in a tree.
So you're supposed to be thinking, he's up on a mountain of God.
Yep.
there's a type of tree.
Yeah.
It's not called an eitz, but but probably because it's trying to remind you that this is going to be Sinai. So it's called a sine. It's a
species of tree species that rhymes tree. With the word Sinai. Yeah.
Yeah. It's burning because of God's presence.
Yeah, God's presence appears when
or
it
the
appears.
Angel of the Lord, which...
Which, yeah, that's right. Is the human Yahweh figure who always appears on a throne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
So it's a type of tree of life?
This is where this is going to end in the last chapter of the book of Exodus, is with this glorious fiery presence taking up residence in the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle. The same exact divine presence in the same visible form will take up residence in the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle.
So which is a representation of the high place on
Eden. So this is how design patterns work. This becomes a retro commentary. You're supposed to now go back to the Eden story and be like, wow, yeah, the tree of life was where they would meet God and participate in his eternal life.
Hmm.
Now, there was no fire in the tree of life mentioned. But now that these two moments are joined, we're supposed to kind of merge them together in our imagination and see them as reflect, just like the two lines of biblical poetry, like an A line and a B line.
Mm.
So now you have the A line is the Eden story, and now the B line is like Moses here, meeting God.
It's so cool to think about the tree of life on fire.
Yeah, totally.
But not being consumed.
But not being consumed. That's right.
It's a cool image.
It is a cool image. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. When Yahweh saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the Sineh, saying, Moshe, Moshe. And Moshe said, Hineni, look, here I am. This is how the story of Abraham and Isaac began. It came about after these things that God tested Moses.
Tested Abraham.
Came about after these things that God tested Abraham. God said to Abraham, Abraham, Abraham. And Abraham said, Hineni, here I am.
So you're supposed to be connecting that story too.
Yes. Yeah. When's the last time somebody was called to go to a mountain or was up on a mountain and God repeated their name twice and they said, Hineni?
Right.
Oh, that happens one time. One other time. With Abraham, called to go up and sacrifice his son for his own sins.
Yeah.
Now, here's a new Noah going up to a mountain of God, and he's talking like Abraham.
Yes.
He's meeting God the way God met Abraham on Mount Moriah.
Mm-hmm.
So do you see now all the three narratives of high places with trees, Eden, Mount Ararat, Mount Moriah, are all being hyperlinked here in this scene.
Mm. Yeah.
They're all supposed to come together in your imagination.
Okay.
Then God said, don't draw near to here. That's priestly language.
Mm.
You're in the Holy of Holies. Mm. You're approaching it. You just approached the Holy of Holies.
Yeah.
Don't draw near. Take your sandals off your feet. You got dung and dirt on your feet from outside the Holy
Place. Yeah, he's shepherding.
Totally, yeah. So leave the signs of the world of death out there and come on into here, for the place on which you're standing is holy space.
Yeah.
So he just walked into the Holy of Holies.
This is the Holy of Holies.
He's just walked into the, and he's the son of Levi.
Which is what the tree of life is too.
Exactly.
It's being in the Holy of Holies.
Exactly. The tree of life is the Holy of Holies, at the Holy of Holies.
Mm.
He said, I'm the God of your father, God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob. And what is the normal human response when they wake up or discover that they're standing in the midst of that space?
Mm.
He hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Okay, so a new Noah just walked into Eden.
Yeah.
An Eden place.
Yeah.
But notice, we're not in Eden. We're at some other place in the dry land.
Yeah.
But he just discovered this is an Eden spot, just like Jacob was in a field near Bethel, and he woke up, and that's an Eden spot. Here's Moses. Okay, so we have new Adam, new Noah, and Abraham called upon here.
Hmm.
Moses, Hineni, here I am. When God called Abraham, it was to go sacrifice his son at this place, right? At the high place.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to then, in our minds, go back and compare each narrative.
Okay.
What do I anticipate will happen on this Eden spot?
A test.
There's going to be some kind of test. It's going to involve somebody having to make a choice. related to all those other stories.
What are you going to do? How are you going to decide what's good and bad?
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah, God's going to give a command.
Are you going to participate in my desire to use this family to rescue the world?
I want to bring people into my presence so that they're transformed to become my representatives and rulers in the world. However, to draw near, you're going to have to make a choice. Will you trust my wisdom and command, or are you going to do things your own way?
Yeah.
This very spot is going to host that narrative pattern yet once again.
All right.
That's what all these patterns are setting us up to expect.
Let's see it.
And look at verse 10 of chapter 3. Therefore, come now, I'm going to send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign that I'm the one who sent you. When you bring the people out of Egypt, y'all shall worship Elohim right here at this spot where you are. In other words, he's going to send Moses to liberate the people. And then what Moses just experienced right here, he is now to bring all of the people so that they can experience what he just experienced. It's setting up now this as a design pattern for the people to undergo.
Yeah.
Moses just underwent what all the people are supposed to undergo.
Everyone's supposed to enter the Holy of Holies.
The whole nation will come up here and meet me here just like you did.
Why does he call it a sign?
This will be the sign. Because Moses is doubting that he's the one. He brings up five objections of like, who am I? Yeah. I'm not very good at speaking.
Yeah.
Please send somebody else. And so God finally says, listen, here, trust me.
Yeah.
Come here and watch. It'll be a replay of what you just experienced. When you have a sign, it's a foretaste of the ultimate real thing.
So the sign here is more of a promise.
Correct. It's a really interesting sign because it's usually signs come in the moment.
Yes. This is not a sign in the moment.
This is a sign to say, if you trust me and
you will.
And you lead the people here.
It's a sign you will see in the future.
You'll see a sign in the future that will vindicate your trust.
I would call this like a confirmation.
Yeah. It's a unique use of the word sign.
Okay.
So think. This narrative just told me that what Moses just went through is what all of the people are going to go through.
Yeah.
So what happens? You go back into the story and you have Israel enslaved to Pharaoh and then, the 10 plagues. And then Israel is brought through the waters of death, just like Moses. And then Israel is brought through the wilderness. And then Israel is brought to the mountain to meet with God. So it's as if Moses in Exodus 2 and 3, in his own personal narrative, just anticipated the narrative of all of the people who are enslaved in Egypt, going to go through the waters of death, through the wilderness, and to meet God at the exact same spot.
Yeah.
It's like Exodus 1 through 4 is the Exodus story in a nutshell in the life of one person who's then going to lead all the rest of the people.
And it's a design pattern riffing off of stories before.
Yeah,
it's doing both things.
Yeah. Biblical authors did.
It's packing it in.
Packing it in. Okay. So that's just set up for the Sinai story.
Yeah. Because when they get to Sinai, they don't go up the mountain.
Correct. So let's pause real quick here. After the deliverance through the waters of the sea, Israel goes into the desert, just like Moses did. But before they get to the mountain, they have an incident. Exodus 15, verse 22.
So Moses is rescued.
Yep.
Through Moses, God's rescued Israel. Now they've passed through the waters. They're in the wilderness.
They're in the wilderness on the way to Mount Sinai. Yeah.
Okay.
And this happens.
All
right. Exodus 15, verse 22. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea. I mean, we're walking away from the shoreline of the sea.
Okay.
It just happened.
Yeah.
Then they went into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days into the wilderness, and there was no water.
It's a long time from the water.
3 days, and then we face a test. When they came to Marah, which is the Hebrew word for bitter, they could not drink the waters of Marah because they were Marah. So they named
bitter.
The place Marah. That's good. Come on, it's good. But then the people grumbled at Moses.
Yeah.
It's the first of many grumbling narratives. What are we going to drink?
This is an important question. What are we going to drink?
What are we going to drink?
You're going to die. 3 days without water.
You just said you're going to save us, and you brought us now 3 days.
It's about as long as a human can go without water, right?
Yeah.
3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a week. You'll die within a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Moses cried out to Yahweh, and Yahweh showed him a tree.
A tree.
A tree.
An eighth.
And so Moses threw the tree into the waters, and the waters became sweet, that is, drinkable. Yeah, potable, 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 yeah. There, God made for them a statute and regulation. There, God tested them. This was a test, it turns out. This was a test. So they're not at a mountain, they're in the wilderness.
They're in the wilderness. They're about to die of thirst.
Yeah. They came to, and they find a spring of water. They find a pool. But
they can't drink it.
The pool represents a test. Okay. Are they going to trust that God could provide for them, even out of these death waters, bitter waters? No, they don't. They grumble and protest and say, what are you going to do? But Moses, he trusts. He thinks that God can provide life for them, even in this place of death.
Because he cried out to the Lord.
He cries out to Yahweh. That's the classic
kind of the priestly
term for intercession and plea for God's help.
Yeah.
So Moses, not unlike the people, he cries out to Yahweh.
People grumble,
yep.
But Moses intercedes.
People don't trust God, they grumble.
Now, can I just say, I empathize with these people.
Oh, of course, totally.
But at the same time, we have to remember, they just were miraculously rescued.
They just
witnessed.
This is the first story after the
insane
rescue through the sea.
Insane provision from God.
Yes, and what any person would do after being delivered through the waters of the sea is say, Yahweh has power over water.
Yeah. But take 3 days without water.
Yeah, totally.
And that starts to fade back into the memory a little bit.
Totally.
And you start to go.
And that's the point.
Okay.
And that's the point.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. But Moses trusts, so he cries out to God.
Mm.
And what does God do? He shows him a tree. And then says, this tree will become the agent of salvation to turn the waters of death into waters of life.
Trees becoming salvation, like the ark.
Just like the ark went into the waters.
Mm.
This story presents itself to the reader as a riddle.
Yeah, it is, because I've read the story and I'm just like, okay.
Yep, it's a riddle.
Weird.
These stories, they're usually very short.
Mm.
They're puzzling. It's hard to even understand who's doing or saying what.
Yeah.
And they seem bizarre. And this is the biblical author's way of winking at us and saying, dear reader, follow the design patterns. Do a Psalm 1. Take a long walk. And you'll start to see what we're inviting you to.
I think when I read the story, it wasn't tree. It was branch. Let's see what NIV. I think it's branch.
Here, I got you. Showed him a piece of wood, says NIV, says piece of wood.
Oh, piece of wood. Whatever reason, I have the image of a branch. Like when I've heard the story before, I always had an image of a branch.
ESV has log. New American Standard has tree.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good old NAS.
Yeah. So actually, let's keep going.
Yeah.
It gets better.
Great.
So the whole point now is this was a test. Verse 25 tells us.
Yeah, he tested
this whole
there.
Thing was a test.
Mm-hmm.
And only Moses passes the test.
Mm.
People grumble, and the tree becomes the vehicle. The tree goes into the water, becomes the vehicle of turning death into life. And there, he made for them a statute and regulation, which is covenantal law. Vocabulary. But
right.
The covenant hasn't even been made yet.
Yeah, so it's foreshadowing that.
It's foreshadowing it. So what's the test? Before the covenant's been made, what is the test of their covenant relationship?
They trust God for provision.
Verse 26, God said, if you will listen to the voice of Yahweh your God and do what is right in his eyes.
Shema.
Yes. If you will shema to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases that I've put on the Egyptians on you, for I, Yahweh, am your healer.
And that's called a statute?
A statute and regulation. Do you remember how this was in the law series? There's that story of after Abraham passes his test on Mount Moriah and offers up Isaac, and then God gives Isaac back.
Mm.
Later in the book of Genesis, God recalls back to that moment and says, in that moment, Abraham kept all of my laws and statutes and regulations.
That's right.
Before
there are any.
It's using the vocabulary of the laws of the covenant from Mount Sinai and saying, Abraham kept the laws of the covenant by listening to God's voice and obeying it.
It's a way for the biblical author to show you that this story is connected to these other stories.
That's right. Yeah. What does God really after in the covenant relationship? Just people who listen to his voice. Which and when you listen to the voice, you're making the right choice when you stand before the tree. So here's Israel before another tree, and Moses passes the test, but the people fail. And so God says, listen, this is the test that I'm inviting you into. Will you please just listen to my voice? And if you do, that will be listening to the commandments and regulations.
So Moses, by interceding, was listening to the voice.
Moses, yeah, and he's a contrast to the people. The people grumble to Moses, but Moses cries out to Yahweh for salvation.
And this might be just parsing too much.
Sorry.
But listening to the voice is connected to obeying a command, right?
Correct.
What's the command here that they're not obeying?
Oh, yeah, got it.
They're just worried that they're going to die.
Yeah, that's right. So you're right. It's in this sense, it's about faith and trust.
Okay.
You're right. The command would be to have faith and to trust. Because the narrative is they came into the wilderness. There was no water. Mm-hmm. They finally found water, but it's water of death. And then what they grumble, instead of crying out to Yahweh, Yahweh, creator of heaven and earth and the seas.
Yeah, turn this water into, give us water.
Right, provide us water of salvation, the water of life here.
Yeah.
No, what they say is, what are we going to drink? They grumble, they get angry. But Moses, in contrast, cries out to Yahweh for salvation.
The narrative would seem cleaner to me if the story went, they found the water, God said, put the tree in the water, and they're like, whatever.
Oh, sure.
We just want to go back.
I get it.
Because now they're not listening to the voice. They're not listening to the command.
Correct. You're right. So the way the narrative is designed, the test becomes back at the moment when they grumbled.
Yeah.
They're failing the test when they grumble.
Hmm.
The test becomes when we're out here with no resources, are we going to trust that Yahweh can provide for us or not? And they're grumbling. Is failing a test?
These tests are hardcore, man.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Abram's test.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
Will you sacrifice your firstborn son? This test? You going to trust me after 3 days with no water?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now you're in front of a pool of water you can't drink?
Yeah.
You still going to trust me?
I would have failed that test.
Yeah, these aren't easy tests.
No, they're not. Nope, they're not. I'm with you.
Okay.
I'm with you. But Moses passes the test on their behalf.
Thank you, Moshe.
Thank you, Moshe. This is setting up the role of Moses in the narrative on the mountain. So he does trust God, and God rescues the people through a tree thrown into the waters. Then he says, listen, guys, we're going to do this test again. He tested them. There's going to be more chances. Verse 26, if you will listen to my voice, then I'm going to save you from death and evil. I am your healer. We're gonna test you again.
It's not
guys.
Just gonna be about going thirsty. Yeah.
We're not one and done here. There's gonna be multiple tests because I want you to be my representatives to the nations.
Wow.
Then after Moses intercedes and saves the people, what's their next stop? Verse 27. They came to oak trees. They come to a whole grove of trees, and there were 12 fountains of water, 70 palm trees, and so they camp under the trees by the waters.
12 and 70.
Yeah, come now. Yeah, it's a little Eden spot right here.
That's
right.
Water under trees.
Yeah.
The number 12 and 70 is interesting because that's foreshadowing 12 tribes, right?
Yeah, well, they are the 12 tribes now.
Oh, okay.
Yep, they're the 12 tribes. So they find a water of life for each tribe, a little spring of life for each tribe.
Each tribe gets their own little spring.
Yeah, totally. And 70 is how many descendants of Jacob went down into Egypt at the end of this. They went from the 70 with Jacob into the 12 tribes.
So it's saying there's enough for everyone here.
Yes. Yeah.
It's Eden for everyone.
Yeah. It's the equivalent of Eden. And the equivalent of, in Solomon's reign, everyone got their own vine and fig tree.
It's interesting how God says, I'm going to be testing you more.
Yeah.
But here, let me give you a little Eden.
Yeah,
anyways.
Totally. That's right. And in this story, who or what passed the test that gave them the gateway into the little Eden? Moses.
Yeah, Moses on their behalf.
Did.
So he oh, wow.
The story's 5 verses.
Oh, yeah. It's so easy to skip over because you're like,
that's right.
Weird and, random story.
Yeah.
How did that make it in the Bible?
Totally.
Let's just keep going.
Yeah. So this story is put here as a riddle to invite the reader to meditate, to link the story into design patterns through the key repeated words. And then all of a sudden you find yourself in five verses, you've replayed the story of the whole Bible in five verses.
Wow.
Humans, life and death choice, tested at a tree. They fail, but one intercedes on their behalf and leads them to a new Eden. And you're just like, oh, sweet. Wow, the seed of the woman.
This is what you mean by literary genius.
Yes, totally. This is what I'm talking about. The whole Bible's like this. Every paragraph. That's mind-blowing. I really, these are the moments where I'm just like, okay, there's brilliant humans who write brilliant literature.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a human literary art form.
Supercharged with divine.
At its peak, yeah. I think, I can't say this is evidence of the inspiration
sure.
of the divine and human partnership of the scriptures, but when the more years I spend seeing how intricately every word is crafted in sequence.
At a minimum, it is... It's human literary genius.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And at a maximum, it's an inspired gift of God.
To help us
know
how to choose wisely.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And
that's right.
Embrace eternal life.
Yeah. So let's take our next step then into this whole story and watch it get played out on a macro level at Mount Sinai. Whole test. Okay, we could spend a lot more time at what happens at Mount Sinai. But for the purpose of the video, I think we can do the pieces pretty quick. Chapter 19, Moses leads the people to Mount Sinai. The word Sinai appears for the first time in Exodus 19.
So now it's not called Mount...
Sinai.
No, well, go...
Oh, Horeb.
Horeb.
Yeah.
Mount Horeb.
Yeah, that's
now
right.
They're just like, oh, let's start calling it Sinai.
Yeah. Totally. And then it will go back and forth between Sinai and Horeb throughout the rest of the Torah. But right here at Exodus 19, they come to the place where at the Sinai bush where God said the people were going to come. And in the third month, after the sons of Israel came out of the land of Egypt, on that day they came to the wilderness of Sinai, where Moses met God at the Sinai. So the significance of that is the tree at the top of this mountain is not going to be mentioned in the narrative again.
But the mountain is now called the tree.
The mountain is called by the name of that tree.
Yeah.
And I meant to imagine that tree at the top of the mountain for every scene when Moses goes up there.
Yeah.
So the famous thing is God says again to the people, you're going to be a kingdom of priests of the nations if you listen to my voice.
Listen.
Yeah.
Shema shema.
So God shows up in the fire and cloud, just like he did to Moses, on top of the mountain. He's doing for all the people what he did for Moses.
Yeah. A little grander.
But more grand. Not just fire in a bush.
Yeah. It's
the bush is lighting up the whole mountain.
Yeah.
With the storm cloud.
Yeah.
The people saw the thunder and lightning and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, and the people saw it and they trembled and stood at a distance. And they said to Moses, you speak to us and we'll listen. We'll listen to your voice, but don't let God speak to us.
Yeah.
Because he's going to kill us. We'll die.
Yeah, that looks dangerous.
It's dangerous. So this is the trick, right? Moses thought he was going to die. He was afraid. So he hid his face. I mean, he was freaked out, but he didn't die.
Yeah.
He was transformed by that encounter.
But even he was scared.
But he was scared. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Rightfully so, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're in the presence of some power.
Yeah.
And we know, and this is interesting, maybe I'm going too far with this, but eating of the tree of life can be a curse. It could
Yeah. Well, let's at least say this. Do you remember? The tree of life represents God's eternal power and life and glory. Being eaten by a mortal dirt creature,
It's
going to change you.
Yeah.
If for a human to exist as an eternal partner of God, that we're going to need some kind of upgrade.
Yeah.
Of the hardware.
Yeah, and it might not be pleasant. It looks unpleasant.
What if it was unpleasant?
What if it is unpleasant?
That's what the burning bush represents. It's like, whoa.
It's going to consume me like that bush?
I'm now here in the presence of my creator.
Yeah.
He's telling me to come close.
To fire consuming a bush.
But it's going to mean the end of the version of me that I know and that I'm familiar with.
Because I could get consumed by this fire.
Yeah.
What's it going to do to me?
And God's like, no. This is, come here. I've got the next thing for you. And Moses is like, I'm going to stick with the version of me that I know.
I want to upgrade you.
Totally. So this is what the people are saying right here. They see the divine glory and they say, we don't want to go near. So they say, Moses, you go. You've been up there. So you go on our behalf and we'll listen to you if you tell us what God says. But we don't want to go up there and meet and talk with God. And then look what Moses says. Moses says, don't be afraid. God has come in order to test you. This is your test. This is your test. He's come to test you in order that the fear of him might remain with you so that you don't sin. So Moses went up to the mountain. He faced the fear and he ended up in the Holy of Holies. And it didn't kill him. It transformed him. He brings the people to the foot of the mountain. It's the burning bush times a gazillion in terms of like the light show. And the people are called to go up and they won't go up with Moses. And Moses says, no, you guys, this is the test. God doesn't want to kill you. He wants you to become his kingdom of priests to the nations. And they say no. They say no. They don't pass the test.
In order that you may fear him.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, that's from garden vocabulary, Garden of Eden.
Yeah, and it's just wisdom vocabulary.
Correct. The fear of the Lord. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So that you don't sin.
So you can know how to live... In a human way, truly human way, that doesn't lead to violence and destruction.
When you come to the tree of life, now as the narrative develops, you realize it's a fearful thing to take from the tree of life.
That's what I was just thinking about was that in any way for Adam and Eve? Can you go back and go, was the tree of life intense in some way that they're kind of like...
I'll take for this other one.
This other one looks a little more chill.
Yeah.
That one's on fire.
Correct. I think that's how the design patterns are meant to make our imaginations go back and ponder.
Yeah, it's interesting. I could trust in God and his presence, but what will happen to me?
Yeah.
Wow. Will I be okay?
Will I be okay? Yeah. Huh. So now all of a sudden, it's not taking from the tree of knowing good and bad that is the test. It's, will you enter into the presence of the tree of life? That's the test, right? The test is, will the Israelites go up like Moses to stand with him in the divine presence?
Which was the first command.
By the tree. And now it's, God has come in order to test you. What's the test? Are you going to come up and sit before the tree of life and be in God's presence? That's the test now. Does that make sense?
It does. I don't know if I fully appreciate it.
Oh, well, it's just that when design patterns work, it's never a full repeat. It's the same concepts, but in inverted relationships.
The test, Abram, was don't eat of the tree of knowing good and bad on your own terms, and then, but listen to my voice and obey. The test wasn't eat of the tree of life or be in my presence.
Correct. In Eden, it was eat of the tree of life, don't eat from that tree.
So the test is don't eat of the tree.
The test is don't eat from that other tree.
The test here is be in my presence.
Come up to the burning tree.
Yeah, right.
To be in God's presence. And the test is, are you going to come up or are you not going to come up?
But this is a unique calling. This isn't a calling for every human. This was
A
calling for a people that God wanted to...
We're getting pretty cosmic here.
Yeah.
In terms of up to that cosmic story. One nation becoming God's royal priest to all of the other nations.
And the reason why I'm saying that is because before, the narrative logic is God's protecting you from that tree.
Oh, sure.
So what's he doing telling humans to come in and now partake? Is it a trick? Or is it an actual invitation? And it seems like it's an actual invitation. But it's because he's doing something unique here. It's like an exception. This seems like an exception is what I'm saying.
Hold on. I guess what I'm saying is the test has switched trees here, right? The Sineb bush, the burning Sineb bush is the tree of life.
Yeah.
It's where you meet God
and
are transformed.
Yeah.
That's the tree that the test now relates to. Right. Are you going to come up to God? So how is it a trick?
I would wonder if it was a trick because if I knew the story of Adam and Eve.
Yes.
And I'm realizing what's happening here. I would go, hey, God. If I eat of the tree,
yeah,
I will have eternal death.
Oh, I understand.
You're protecting us from this tree.
I see.
Right?
I see. Oh, got it. They're not eating from the tree of life.
This isn't the tree of life.
This is their tree of life.
But it is the, it's but God's presence.
I understand. Yes, yes,
it is the tree of life.
I understand. But I think for them to eat from the tree of life means to take on the job that what God wants to give them.
Yes, and I think that's what I'm saying.
I see.
Because I'm thinking this is a unique calling for unique people.
Thanks. Okay, that's good. I was trying to understand how you're processing the analogy.
Yeah, because my expectation at this point is like, no, don't do that. We need the person to first do away with evil.
Yeah.
Because you go and be in God's presence,
right.
Eating of the tree of life on the cosmic mountain.
I understand.
God's protecting us from that until this is all dealt with.
Yeah, got it.
And
got
now
it,
got we've got the story of God saying, well, I'm going to deal with it, and I'm going to deal with it through you guys, so I'm inviting you back in.
Yep.
This feels like an exception.
I see. Yeah, it is. It's the chosen family of Abraham.
The chosen family. It's the election idea.
The election motif, yeah.
Of
the chosen.
I'm going to do something unique with you.
Yeah. So that you can mediate my purposes out to the nations.
Mm-hmm.
You're chosen for the many, but this is unique.
Yes.
Yeah, he's not doing this with any other nation.
And so,
family of Abraham.
The test is, will you listen to me, even though everything inside of you is saying, that's dangerous.
Yes.
That's dangerous.
Yeah.
I'm going to die.
Correct.
Will you trust me
that
my wisdom is greater?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
my purpose is
now
not
the test of trusting God's wisdom is actually eating of the tree. But before, that was the
correct.
That was just the thing that they got to do.
Yeah, correct. You got it. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Step in the story come the list of covenant commands that God asked them to listen to. And only Moses goes up to receive them. The people say, we don't want to go up. You go up, Moses. So Moses goes up and he's up there at the Sinai and he gets these, the commands of the covenant and the tablets that represent. He brings them down and says, these are the terms of the covenant. And the people say, we will listen and we will do them.
Yeah.
The first two,
here's God's wisdom for you.
Yeah, here's God's wisdom. The first two covenants are, I am Yahweh, no other God, created heaven and earth, and no other God rescued you out of Egypt.
Yeah.
Don't represent me with idols.
Yeah.
You didn't see any image up on the mountain in the cloud.
Mm.
I'm not a tree. I'm not an animal.
Mm.
I'm not a star.
Yeah.
I'm the maker of all those things.
Mm.
So don't do that. Okay?
Cool.
The people say, yes, deal. So Moses says, Exodus 24, okay, you're on board. I'm going to go tell God that you want to get married.
Yeah.
You're ready to get married.
Yeah.
You said yes, and so let's go. I'm going to seal the deal. Moses goes up. 40 days go by, and then comes the story of the golden calf.
Yeah. 40 days go by,
yeah,
and they're like, where's Moses?
Yes.
What are we doing here?
Yes. Yeah.
Are we protected? Are we safe?
Yeah. Exodus 32, that when the people saw that Moses embarrassed them, delaying. It's the word caused shame.
Oh, that's not.
It gets translated delayed.
Oh.
It's yitbushashru. They were embarrassed about his not coming down from the mountain.
Yeah. Leaving us hanging.
Yeah. It's also the last time the word was used was, and they were naked and there was no bush.
Mm.
There was no shame. So they were ashamed by Moses delaying, meaning, like, where is he? This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
We were just about to get married and the 40 days go by. What is this?
Yeah, yeah.
He's up there. What's he doing?
Okay.
The people assemble around Aaron and they say, here, let's make an Elohim that will lead us. As for this Moses, right, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we have no idea what happened to him.
Mm.
He's gone. So let's make an Elohim.
Yeah.
And obviously they're violating the first commands of the covenant.
Yeah.
The first idol in the biblical story is happening at the foot of a high place.
Mm.
So the real high place is Moses, a new Adam up there, at the tree, meeting with God's presence. Here at the foot of that real high place, they make a false Eden. Mm. They have this party, they're having rich food and drink, and they're playing and singing and dancing, but they're not up in the real Eden. Mm-hmm. They're creating a false God down at the... So it's this contrast.
Yeah.
You got the real Eden up top.
Yeah.
They're creating a false God and a false Eden down below. This is important for what the meaning of idolatry and the high places are in the rest of the story of Israel.
Okay.
And so let's just get to it. I'll bring it all together. Moses is up on the mountain. God says, look what the people are doing down there. I'm going to destroy them. Mm-hmm. Leave me alone. We've talked about this. Mm-hmm. God says, leave me alone. Mm-hmm. And Moses proceeds to not leave God alone.
Yeah.
He tells God to change his decision about the people by remaining consistent to his promises to Abraham. Mm-hmm. And God says, good, that's what I'll do. Mm. Then look at this down in Exodus 32, the end of the chapter. Verse 30, on the next day, Moses said to the people, you all have committed a great sin. They failed the test.
Yeah, big time.
Big time.
With a flourish. They failed.
With pizzazz.
With jazz.
You remember the whole thing was, this is a test so that you don't sin.
Mm.
They failed the test. You've committed a great sin.
Yeah.
So now I am going up. Moses is going to go up the mountain. And perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. He's going to go up and atone for their sins.
Sacrifice.
What? Yeah. So think of all the design patterns. Noah, Abraham. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. So Moses returned to Yahweh and said, oh, this people has committed a great sin. They've made a god of gold for themselves. So what we're ready for him to do is to get out an animal.
Yeah.
Right? Just like Noah.
Right.
And then verse 32. But now, if you will, please forgive their sin. But if you're not, kill me. Blot me out from the book that you have written.
He offers himself.
He offers himself.
That's what we were looking for.
Yeah, Genesis 3:15. He offers himself. This moment is so important for the storyline of the design pattern of the wounded victor. Huh. He gives his own life in the place of the people as a sacrifice of atonement. And what's interesting, Yahweh says, you don't have to do that.
Yeah, he doesn't make him do
it. What he says is, the one who has sinned against me, that's the one whose name I'll blot out of my book. But as for you, go down.
So there are we supposed to go, oh, so he isn't the one.
He's not the one, but he...
But man.
He did...
He was ready to be the one.
That's right.
But he wasn't the one.
He's not the one. Now this then... is a part of the complex portrait of Moses' character, where Moses has his own series of failures. He's already had a failure before this.
Okay.
When he met God at the burning bush, he had a failure at that moment where he said, I'm not going to go send somebody else.
Yeah, okay.
And it says God got angry at Moses and says, your brother's going to come and he'll do it in your place. Mm-hmm. And you'll just stand next to him and talk to him, whisper in his ear. But then Moses will have his own...
Is that good with you, Moses? Will that work?
And then Moses will go on to have his own failures. And actually, in an inversion of this, he's going to ask God in Numbers 11 to say, I can't lead this people anymore. They're grumbling against me. And he says, kill me. If you're going to make me lead this people, kill me now.
Mm.
So then... he offers his life again,
yeah,
but for selfish purposes.
To get out of this deal.
Totally. And then he has a failure at the water, at the rock, and
yeah,
restrikes it instead of speaking to it. So anyway, all that to say is this is one of Moses' high points.
Yeah.
And then this is the same narrative moment where he's going to, his face is going to be transformed into divine glory.
Mm-hmm.
So he's complex. At his best, he's like a human up in the New Eden. His face starts glowing. He starts being transformed by the divine, holy, creative power of Yahweh.
Mm.
And he's like a human giving his life for the sins of others up at the New Eden.
Mm.
But then even he fails, and the story goes on.
Hmm.
And the rest of the story of Israel is going to be Israel worshiping idols in the form of at luxuriant green trees on top of high places, worshiping their gods of wood, stone, and metal. And all of the high places that are the culprits of when the prophets name why Israel ends up in exile, it's going to be just replaying what happened to Mount Sinai. So the high places that Israel sacrifices at that appear all throughout the story to follow are just fallout from this moment right here at the story.
Seems like in some way, creating or worshiping idols is really connected to choosing the wisdom on your own terms.
It's creating your own tree of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make us a God who will go up for us.
What more explicit way are you defining and seizing things on your own terms than crafting your own tree of life?
Correct. That's right.
Yeah. But they didn't see it that way. They actually thought they were creating a God that, right?
Correct.
The golden calf.
Create us a God who will lead us out of here.
Yeah.
Like they,
So it's interesting. Yeah. Humans in their own wisdom don't say, well, I'll figure this out. They're like, we'll just find another power that will help us.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's something that can rescue us out of the wilderness, that can lead us out of this place.
And we still do that as humans. Like we give ourselves to other powers.
Correct.
We think we're like getting our own freedom, but instead we're really just kind of creating allegiances with whatever the other power structure force is.
This conversation's a long one. That's okay. But what we're connecting is that golden calf. It becomes the icon moment for the whole history of Israel's idolatry in the promised land. Where does that idolatry take place? In the narrative, it takes place at what the biblical narrators call the high places. Hmm. And every generation of Israel's kings keeps worshiping other gods at the high places. They're called the Bamot in Hebrew. And the particular...
What's called the Bamot?
The high place in Hebrew is called Bamot. Jeroboam, when he goes and he breaks off the northern tribes from the southern tribes, this is in 2 Kings chapter 12, he makes a new temple and he installs two golden calves and says, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. Mm. So he's presented as now replaying the sin of the golden calf, but on a grander scale. And then he sets up, in verse 31, houses on high places all throughout the land and brings in a new priesthood that was not from the sons of Levi. Mm. And then the rest of the narrative is you get little descriptions of these high places. And there's two things on these high places. They're either called the Asherah, which is the name of a Canaanite fertility goddess.
Yeah, and the poles.
And its goddess is symbolized as a symbolic pole placed in the middle of a garden on top of tall hills. Hmm. And sometimes that pole is called in Hebrew the luxuriant tree.
Oh, wow.
In Hebrew, it's the Eitz Ra'anan. And the word Ra'anan is the word like luxuriant or green, but it's spelled with the letters of the word Eden. So Eden is Ayin Dalet Nun, and then the word Ra'anan, the Dalet, the D, looks like the Hebrew letter Resh. When you see this phrase in Hebrew, the luxuriant tree, it looks like you're looking at the word, the
Eden tree
of Eden, but it's backward. All the letters are backwards.
It's like a mixed up.
It's a perverted Eden. Mm, wow. And so you just read through the story and you're like, oh, these false high places, these false Edens where they're worshiping their own human-made trees of life. And it ends them in exile in Babylon. Hmm. So we just brush through whole section of the Hebrew Bible. But the whole point is you get the whole story of Israel in a nutshell, right there at the story of Mount Sinai. And so, what you never get in the stories of Israel to follow is another Moses who offers his life for the people. Hmm. That prophet, a prophet like Moses, never arose.
What's interesting to me, the new thought is when I pictured the tree of knowing good and bad, I think of it in my modern construct of I'm going to be my own king. But now we're talking about it being idols.
Yeah.
Which is saying, I'm going to give my allegiance to another power.
We are creating our own salvation, the thing that we think will give us the life that we want, right?
Yeah. But in an ancient psyche, you're not creating another power. You're just you're creating an opportunity to worship the other power.
I understand.
Right? Because they actually thought these were real
powers. That's right.
Powers.
They thought these were...
And in some ways, they are.
Correct. Because what are they? These gods represent weather, fertility, war, metallurgy, kingship. Fertility is sex.
Yeah.
and also the economy.
Yeah.
Fertility, abundance, and then kingship and war, which we would call politics, sex, money, and power.
Yeah. So it's like by taking of the tree of knowing good and bad, I think of it as like I'm taking my freedom.
I want autonomy.
Yeah, I'm taking things in my own hands.
Yeah.
But really what you're doing is you're just giving your allegiance to...
You're replacing your allegiance.
You're replacing your allegiance.
You're giving your allegiance to some other power.
Because this becomes connected now to creating idols.
Creating idols. That's right. You're giving over your allegiance to...
And the idols are like false trees.
Idols are human-made representations of real divine ideals.
Yeah. Divine ideals...
But
trusting
distorted
in a different way, not God's wisdom, but another wisdom of how to get to those ideals.
Totally. That's right. Yep. And one of these false gods is Baal. Who's Baal? He's the god of thunder. But also, if you look at statues of him, he's usually carrying a mace, big like basher head scepter, and a thunderbolt. So the god of war and thunder. So when I'm a king, and like the king of Moab in the Book of Kings. He sacrifices his son to Chemosh, the god of Moab, and he wins a battle. And then as a king, you go, if I give my son over to Chemosh, he will help me crush the skulls of my enemies. And it creates this, right?
Violent cycle.
Creates, these cycles of humanly... created narratives of how I get the good life and victory and abundance for me and mine. And I'll give even the life of my own sons to, I'll sacrifice my sons for the preservation of my tribe. And the gods look on it approvingly. And all of a sudden you have a recipe for, it's idolatry.
Did the golden calf have a specific god in mind?
Oh, yeah. People have wondered this. The calf was, I'm afraid to say this off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure it's associated with Baal, the calves. But what Aaron says to the people is, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt.
Oh.
And Aaron says, tomorrow we'll have a feast of Yahweh. So this is even more tricky, is that they think they're worshiping Yahweh.
I see.
But what they're actually worshiping is of their own creation.
They're perverting it.
Yeah. So I think the fact that it's not associated with another deity makes it a paradigm that can fit.
They're going to we'll do it on our own terms.
Yeah.
You want us to sit here and wait for Moses to come down.
That's right.
We'll come up with our own way.
Yeah.
Your way seems scary.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting bored.
Totally. Yeah. And it's crazy. What's a storm up on the mountain?
Yeah.
And
we have another idea.
I can't work with a god like that.
I can't work.
It's not manageable. Let's make something manageable.
Yeah.
That we can understand and know and will take us where we want to go. This God who leads us out into the wilderness, we think we're going to die every other day, wants us to trust him in crazy ways. That's crazy. I can't do that.
Man, all this is swimming in my head now. Because you've got the tree of knowing good and bad, which then becomes in some stories really an altar by which to atone. But then also the tree of knowing good and bad also becomes these idols.
Yeah, that's right.
By which...
False trees of life.
False Edens. Trees of life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think for, again, the way thinking of how we've been able to do videos in the past, many of our theme videos have these cycles of patterns.
Yeah.
And we can use composition, color, visual devices
yeah.
to draw analogies between scenes. But the scenes can develop just like these patterns are developing.
But we need to follow one continuity.
Yeah,
if the trees are constantly kind of taking on
different forms
and doing different things, the continuity is, will you trust in my wisdom,
be
in my presence and rule with me, or will you do it on your own terms?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, that's the continuity.
And because you've done it on your own terms and death has been unleashed.
Ah, right.
Will you also...
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Well, I'm going to deal with that.
Yeah, by raising up the seed.
A sacrifice.
Yeah.
And the sacrifice we will get to will eventually make that a sacrifice by hanging on a tree.
Correct. Yep, that's right. And Moses becomes the image of that.
Take me instead.
In the narrative. He's up there on the high place at the tree
talking
to God. And he says, take my life in the place of the people. Yeah.
God likes the attitude, but he's not.
Yeah.
It's not his job description.
Yeah, it's not Moses. Moses is not the one, but he becomes an image of that one. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Bible Project podcast. We are still taking questions that you all have about this series on the Tree of Life. We're going to do another question response episode during the series. So if you have a question about this theme of trees in the Bible or any of the stories that we have explored, we want to hear your questions. If you could record yourself asking the question, give us your name, where you're from, hopefully keep it to about 20 seconds or so, and email it to us at info@bibleproject.com. Next week, we're going to continue in this series by looking at some stories about trees in the life of David and in the book of Isaiah.
I've been dwelling on this image of the Tree of Life being on fire and
being
a little
kind
bit
of
intense.
Terrifying, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And having that same thing is like, if I eat that fruit, it's going to burn me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of this image you've got here of like, you're handing me coal from the fire and you're going to put it on my mouth?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's horrifying.
Because what Isaiah, he announced when he sees God in the burning throne is, I'm a man of impure lips. Today's episode was produced by Dan Gummel. Our theme music comes from the band Tense. The Bible Project is a crowd-funded nonprofit in Portland, Oregon. We make free resources that are showing how the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus. You guys, thank you for being a part of this with us.
Hi, this is Eli. I'm from Oregon.
Astoria.
Yeah, Astoria.
Hi, my name is Liam. I'm from Warrington.
Good God, Liam.
What about you?
Hi, my name is Isaac, and I'm from Oregon.
Awesome, thanks.
Okay. What was the first video that you watched?
The first one I watched was at Five Guys.
You watched it at Five Guys?
Do you remember which video you watched, Liam?
No.
You remember that burger was good though, right? That burger was really good.
Yeah, that's one thing I remember.
We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus.
We're a crowd-funded project by people like me.
Find free videos, study notes, podcasts, and more at thebibleproject.com.